My light's on. We good?
We're good.
Good morning, everybody, and it's great to be here again. It's been a while, so it's nice to see some different faces and different hairstyles. Never mind, I didn't say that. You don't know who I'm talking about. Okay, guess what movie I watched last night? Huh? I watched a movie last night. It was a good one. Fellowship of the Ring, yeah. Let's see, is this thing working? No, try that. I got to get this to work for me, somehow. No. Oh, there it is, look at that. Okay, I watched The Fellowship of the Ring last night, and it's a long movie. It's a long movie. At least 3 hours, I think, is no less. A lot of fun. For those of you who don't watch movies and think it was sinful, I too grew up that way. But it's a great movie. And good adventures, a lot of struggle, a lot of epic stuff going on. And it's these random people that come together from, I mean, there's dwarves and elves and hobbits and everyone wants to eat each other up and fight, and they all have to band together around this ring thing, okay? So that's what it's all about, if you will, and then the plot develops. Interesting thought. You can throw the ring away. You can give it to Gollum or give it to Smeagol or who's the other guy? Sauron? Whoever. I don't care. Get rid of the ring. I'd like you to keep the concept of the fellowship, though. That was interesting. The fellowship was a good concept to hang on to this morning, but we're going to fellowship around something different. And, of course, we pull together every morning on Sunday, and we have a breaking of bread, and we have a centerpiece there, right, which is the Lord's table, the Lord's Supper. We remember Christ through those emblems, and that is a figure. It's a picture. It's just a symbol. Christ is what pulls us together. Isn't that right? That's the fellowship that draws us together. But in that fellowship, and a little more precise to this morning, is the fellowship of the forgiven. We can only stay together as long as we let forgiveness function in our midst. So, as God's forgiveness to us through the work of Jesus Christ unites us with Him, to each other, we can only stay united to each other if we allow that forgiveness amongst ourselves to remain. And that's what this morning is going to be about, forgiveness one to another. So, look into Matthew 18. Matthew chapter 18. You're going to need to read some of this for yourself. I'll get some of it read, and I'm going to run out of time somewhere, and I'm going to go zing. So, go ahead and read ahead all the way through the end of the chapter. Matthew 18, verses 15 and through to the end of the chapter is our passage for this morning. And we'll start with that first section, verses 15 to 17. Let me see. Where do I aim this thing, huh? Right arrow? Is that the right thing? Got it. Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Jenna. So the process of restoration and the whole process of forgiveness is what we read first. Verse 15 says the following. And if your sister, if your brother and sister sins, go and reprove him in private. If he listens to you, you have won your brother. But if he does not listen to you, take one or two more with you, so that by the mouth of two or three witnesses, every fact may be confirmed. And if he refuses to listen to them, tell it to the church. And if he refuses to listen even to the church, let him be to you as a Gentile and a tax gatherer. And I'll hold it right there. This is the first piece of the puzzle. This is the process of forgiveness. This is how you go about the process of forgiveness. There's a couple of pieces to the puzzle. First, there's a problem, right? Something happened. Something broke it up. You did something. I'm offended. Sometimes you don't even know what it is. I've got some funny stories about that I will bypass this time. But sometimes you don't know what you did to the other person, but you notice they're not saying hi to you the same way. Their face is kind of falling off. And there's no smiles anymore. And you kind of start getting the cues. And sometimes they're pretty subtle. And what do you do? So then you have the first process to restore a relationship is, and that's our first process, is confrontation. We got to reach out there and say, what happened? Talk to me. I need to hear some of what's going on. I can't just guess at it. So if you know that there's a problem, if you sense that there's a problem, then you've got to go seek it out. And one of the observations here is, it's not the person, it's not just intuitive. It's the person who feels offended. It's the person who has the sourpuss attitude and who feels like, hey, you did something wrong to me. That's the person who's supposed to initiate it. It could go from either side, but that's the way the passage is written. The person who feels, hey, you did something wrong to me. Go back and talk. Communicate that. The other person just can't guess. So that's the beginning of the process, and then you get another part of the process, and after you've confronted, what happens when they say, hey, I don't know what you're talking about? Yep, talk to the hand. Not listening. You know, that's when you got to say, okay, I got to add a little pressure here. What do I do? You add a witness. You bring another person along and says, hey, you really have hurt this person. Yeah, we know what happened. We understand how the relationship has changed. We understand the damage is done. And one of the interesting rules or concepts my dad brought to me, probably because I needed it, you know, that kind of thing. He says to me, hey, if they feel offended, they're offended. They don't have to prove it. If they feel wrong, they've been wronged. Don't say, well, I didn't do anything. Hey, if they feel wrong, they've been wronged. Deal with that. At least at the emotional level, and keep communicating. Work your way through it. So forgiveness has got to be a specialty among Christians. We've got to be good at this. And we'll get to that and the importance of it as we go. But first off, you got to confront. And if there's kind of this, I don't know what you're talking about, then you've got to bring some heat to it. One witness, two witnesses. And if you need to, we can bring some more heat. And the heat goes up. You brought a witness in. Now what are we going to bring in? We're going to bring a little authority into it. And a lot of times when you interpret this passage, you say, oh, this is talking about the church. It's talking about discipline in the church. It may well be talking about discipline in the church as well. But it's also talking about the family. And it's also talking about school. And it's also talking about camp. It's talking about Bible school. We try to use this principle at our Bible school. You got to bring a witness. Then you got to bring a little heat. You got to bring some authority into it. And what you're trying to do is make the other person aware there is a problem. The problem is serious enough that we need to deal with it. We can't just ignore this one. And you bring the heat up. You ratchet it up. You ratchet it up. And the reason people say this is the church is because they read in discipline as a following step. Well, yeah, there's discipline. But it can certainly apply to the church. But it can also apply to household relationships, institutional relationships, ministry relationships, a lot of other situations. And then you have this next step, which I actually can't read back there. Can you guys read it? No, it's not too bad. A little small. Sorry about that. So expect along the way, the purpose of doing this whole thing is to expect reconciliation, to expect confession, to expect that reaction of saying, you know what? All right. That's three times you've talked to me and I got it. I'm sorry. I'm beginning to recognize it may be a process. Hey, work with me. I didn't see it before. I thought it was, okay, let's talk. So now we've broken through and we can expect confession and we can expect reconciliation and therefore forgiveness. The purpose of the process is forgiveness. A lot of people are super excited when they see this. Oh, yeah, we're going to put this guy under discipline. Yeah, woohoo. It's like, wait, slow it down. This is a process intended to slow the process down. Not intended to say, okay, we checked off 1, 2, 3, 4. Down you go. This is not a beat them down passage. This is a process of forgiveness. In fact, the whole process implies that you need to slow judgment down. You need to slow the separation down. You can't just say, he spoke to me that way and he said that I was this and that's it. I'm not talking to him again. This passage doesn't allow you to break a relationship until you go through a process. You deal with it as an offended person. The other person deals with it as an aggressor, if so. And you slow the judgment down, because judgment can be kind of final. Judgment can ruin relationships, and you can throw people out of your life. It's too easy. And some people get really excited about this passage and say, oh, this is how we do it. This is how we kicked him out of the church. Some people get pretty excited about this. That's not the purpose of the passage. The purpose is to slow the process down so that you can rebuild and heal a relationship. That is the intent. And we'll see that all along here. So, this is going to require humility. This is going to require humility from both sides of the conflict. If you're offended, if you're hurt, and you got to go tell Greg, hey, Greg, you know what you said? It kind of hurt me. Oh, I'm not going to tell him that. He doesn't need to know that. I'll just ice him out. I just won't talk to him. It's a lot easier to ice a person out, isn't it, than to say, hey, man, I'm kind of hurt here. Can we talk about this? You know that one comment you made? I kind of felt like you were talking about me. I don't know. Maybe that wasn't the case, but I can't get over that. Let's talk. That takes humility if you've been hurt. It takes a lot of humility. And so interesting, right? What takes humility also takes a lot of courage. You ever notice that? It takes a lot of guts to go and say, hey, I got a problem. You're my problem. Let's talk. That takes a lot of guts. And on the flip side, it takes a lot of, hey, why are you coming to me? Oh, what did I do to you? I wasn't talking about you. Why are you threatening me? And being able to say, okay, wait. You're saying something, I'm trying to listen. I'm going to slow it down. Let me listen to what you're saying. Why are you hurt and offended? What did I do? Did I miss something? Okay, slow it down. Let me listen again. It takes a lot of humility to listen to the other person. So, again, as Christians, we need to be specialists in this area of forgiveness. We have a fellowship of forgiveness amongst us. It's hard to keep it going, you notice? A lot of churches kind of split over stupid things, right? Because we're not talking. Because we kind of lost the humility sometimes. This is an art. We need to be good at this. Forgiveness. Confrontation. Bring it up a notch. Make the process happen. Know that there's a process in play. And try to say, hey, where is the point of resolution? We're looking all along for those two things. Confession, restoration. Clean it up. Get the fellowship together again. There won't be fellowship if you've got these problems in the mix. So, there is that final judgment, and hey, we're done, we can't talk anymore. There is a time where it can't be fixed. We all lament it when it gets to that point. We want to slow the process down so we don't get to that point. Somewhere, sometime, it happens. And it's not so much an act of, well, I'm going to kick you out of my life. Look at the passage. Look at the language there. It's passive. It's not active. At least in my Bible. Maybe you have a better translation and I'm wrong. But it seems to say, let him be to you. It doesn't say, make him an outsider in your life. It's passive. Let it go. Let the relationship drop away. So it's not a punish him. Ice him out. That's not gonna, you know, and a lot of people jump to that. That's a worldly solution when things go wrong at work. Well, we're gonna ice that person out until he realizes that he needs us. We're gonna play hardball. And we ice people out as a punishment, hoping they turn around and realize their sins. See, we are right. There's no forgiveness in that. That's just hardball. This process is a process that leads to forgiveness. And when you come to the end of it and it doesn't work, it's a heavy heart that says, well, we're going to let that one go. But it's passive. It doesn't need to be discipline in the church, kick him out. In this case, often for the good of the church, it needs to be that. For the good of the church, it's like, yeah, we're going to have to ask this person to not come or not be part of. Sometimes that affects the whole church body. But in personal relationships, it can be passive. And it needs to be passive in many times rather than this excitement. All right, we get to ice another one out. We get to knock him down. That never should be an exciting prospect to us in that way. So, again, keeping the fellowship of the forgiven together takes a lot of work. It's quite a bit of art. Now, there is some heavenly authority involved in this. There's a heavenly authority involved in restoration. I had a couple of friends in high school, last few years of high school for me, and good friends. We did a lot of fun stuff together, go out on motorbikes and tour the plaza and hung out, did some hikes. And somewhere along the line, these two friends of mine got into a good knockdown, drag-out fight. And boom, communication stopped. They would not talk to each other. Now, they hadn't picked a fight with me, and I had a great time with the one friend, and I could visit with the other. And we got along great, but I was like, guys, let's get the club together. The threesome was a lot of fun. What happened to you guys? And when I talked to my one friend, he'd just tell me how evil that other one was and what a terrible snob and this and that. Talked to them. Well, the other guy's so rude and this and all. I tried one way and I tried another. There was no way to bring those two together. I tried really hard. And I says, guys, you got to talk. No. Neither one would pull in. It was crazy. Obviously, human nature takes over. There's a lot of pride in the room. That was what was going on. And I did not have the authority to deal with it. I couldn't get in there and say, hey, talk to each other, say you're sorry, hug, kiss, make up, we're done. You know, like your mom had. Because that's how mom fixes problems, isn't it? Hey, you two, stop squabbling. Hug, kiss, make up, we're done. Right? And it works. You ever notice? It kind of works. You're done. Like, okay, well, that was embarrassing, and I guess I'm friends now. There it is, right? But there's authority to do that when mom does it, not so much when I was trying to do it. I couldn't pull it off. Anyways, somewhere along the line, they patched up, and it was good, and I was like, well, you guys are talking to each other? It was strange. Anyways, but it wasn't my doing in any way, shape, or form. But we do have authority in heaven. We do have heavenly authority in this process of forgiveness and in this process of restoration when we've got a squabble between brothers. Heaven is looking on. Heaven is very interesting. Let me read this passage. It says, truly I say to you, verse 18, whatever you shall bind on earth shall be bound in heaven, and whatever you loose on earth shall be loosed in heaven. Again, I say to you that if two of you agree on earth about anything that they may ask, it shall be done for them by my Father who is in heaven. For where two or three have gathered together in my name, there I am in their midst. There's some significant authority in heaven when it comes to relationships amongst ourselves in the church. Heaven is very interested in what goes on here, okay? Heaven is looking on in a very interested fashion. Heaven is going to respond. When we show grace on earth, heaven will respond. Heaven will respond and say, good, that is positive. And you might say, well, I'm not sure if that was fair. That's the point. Grace is never fair. That's the whole point of grace. It's not fair. But God approves. God approves of grace. Our relationships on earth are very important to our Heavenly Father. He's looking in. He's looking on. You know that verse says you're going to give account for every word you speak? Can't remember where it is right now. Remember that verse? Well, apparently you're also going to give account for every relationship you drop. How about that? okay, there's a few people I can think of now. Now that got uncomfortable, right? Because there are people in our lives that, yeah, I dropped that relationship. Yeah, I don't want to talk to that person again. But there's heavenly investment in us. God is looking on. God is interested in what happens here. And God is listening in. And you see this portion about prayer. It's like prayer can be multiplied. If you two could just agree and pray, that would multiply your prayers. Isn't that interesting? Heaven is listening in when there's unity, when the fellowship is functioning, when the relationships have been restored, heaven listens in. So there is a real importance in keeping the fellowship in the church, the fellowship of the forgiven. You notice that it's forgiveness that brings us together. It's Christ that brings us together, but it's the forgiveness. And if you go off and say, well, I don't need to be forgiven, then you can't be part of the group. If you say, nobody needs to forgive me, I didn't do anything wrong, well, then you're out. You're not part of the group, no matter how good you are. You can't be part of the group if you're not forgiven. That's the point. So it's going to take the forgiveness to allow us to go on. In Jesus' name, we can gather, we can pray, and we can forgive. In Jesus' name, we have the authority to proceed, to move ahead, to move along. That's how this fellowship hangs together. In Jesus' name. Okay, so let's see. We have a few questions here. Peter is our spokesman. And Peter does a great job of asking this question. Very important question. Any of us would, maybe we wouldn't have asked it quite the way he did because we weren't as smart as him. Okay, but Peter's pretty smart here. I like how he asked this question. He really has my best interest at heart. His question in verse 21 says, Peter came and said to him, Lord, how often shall I forgive my brother's sin against me? How often shall my brother sin against me and I forgive him? Up to seven times? I like the question. Good question. He has my best interest at heart. All right? This is good. I appreciate Peter for this. He's got a little bit of self-respect left here, you know? He says, hey, hold on. I mean, how many times am I going to get thrown under the bus? Because I keep forgiving. You know, when's that stop? He's got my best interest at heart, you know? We got to have limits, Lord. Show us parameters here. We want some checks and balances here. We don't just want this free grace thing. Come on. That's going to be a problem. I'm going to get tired of it. And I'm, you know, that's not good. Right? So Peter's asking some good questions on my behalf. And in my best interest, a little bit of self-respect going on here. He says, well, just a minute, what about this? And he brings it up, must I forgive my brother? He's got it right, isn't it? Nobody wants to forgive. It's an obligation, it seems, and I would agree with that. It feels like an obligation, probably is an obligation. So how many times must I forgive? And really, is he my brother? Or can I just like, okay, he's not my brother. Maybe I should look forward to that. Let's just discard the option over here. You know? Maybe that is a good thing. So, and then again, there's how many times, and this is important, rule lovers? Any rule lovers out here? Right? I love rules. Because then I know just where to break them. That's not what you meant, though. Right? Some people really like rules. Some people need rules to feel safe. Like, this is what makes me tick. For some people, I need to know where they're going to stop and then where I'm going to stop, right? Rules seem important. Parameters, limits. And there's another benefit of rules. Rules make me better than the other person, right? Because I kept the rules and he didn't. So it helps me feel better about me when I can say, shame on you, right? It's always good for me to have rules that I can keep and that they don't. Isn't that right? So rules. Peter's asking for a rule. Make a rule, Lord, about this. Seven times seems good to me. That seems pretty spiritual. The Pharisees would only forgive three times, you know, but we're Jesus followers. We'll forgive seven times. Seven's a magic number, isn't it? That'll work. Let's go there. This will make us pretty nice people, it appears. So Peter asks some good questions on my behalf and on your behalf, and his wish is to limit grace and to protect ourselves. And maybe even climb a notch up the ladder of spirituality, because I forgive more than you did. Right? So there's all these little things going on. But if you really look into any of those reasons, there's a little bit of pride involved, isn't there? There's a little bit of selfishness involved. There's a little bit of self-respect, me come first. A little bit of this is involved, and as we really examine this, Jesus tears it apart right away. Jesus says in verse 22, I do not say to you up to seven times. That's what you said, Peter. But up to 70 times seven until you quit counting. Just keep forgiving, Peter. There are no limits. There are no rules about forgiveness. There's no stopping it. Forgiveness is the economy of heaven. It's like saying you can only earn $3 an hour. There's no limits. That's not what the minimum wage says. I'm saying something different. You got it right. You can only earn $3 an hour. There are no limits to God's economy of forgiveness. This is what heaven runs on. Grace, forgiveness. It keeps going. We need more of it, not less of it. And it's going to take humility, and it's going to take a lot of pride out of our system. It kind of hurts to forgive. We lose a little something, it seems. And what we gain seems, okay, I guess I fixed that problem. Boy, that I feel kind of rubbed and raw on one side. You know, that kind of hurt. But that's what forgiveness feels like at the time. Let's keep talking about this a little more. There are no stops to forgiveness. And what Jesus is saying here, and if you interpret this as the economy of heaven, he says, grace is free and abundant. There are no stops to grace. This is God. This is Jesus representing his Father. There are no stops to forgiveness. So, now we get a parable. And this is where I toast. All right, I'm toast. You guys read the parable. This is how the parable goes. I'll tell it to you. Verses 23 on through the end. Keep an eye on that parable. And this is how it goes, all right? Here. Yep, self-respect. Yep, check boxes. Yep, where's the parable? Oh, no. Oh, no. Got it. Here we go. This is how the parable starts. We have a king, very great person, and he's got a lot of money, and he's got a lot of business accounts out there, and he says it's time to settle up and square some accounts. So he calls in his first servant, and he says, hey, dude, you owe me quite a lot of money, 10,000, I think, denarii or something like that, which is apparently a lot of money. And he says, pay up right now. It's due. It's past due. Bring it in. And the servant falls on his knees and says, please, Lord, I don't have the money. I can't get it all. I can't come up with it today. But give me time. I've got some business enterprises, investments out there. I'm going to cash a few things in. I think I can, maybe pull together one third of it, maybe postpone it a little more, you know? Let's create a debt payment plan. And the king says, nope, it's all due. But please, Lord, I just don't have it right now. And the king says, you know what? You're a sorry soul. I'm going to forgive you. I'm going to forgive your whole debt. It's gone. Well, that's a pretty surprised servant. And he says, boy, where did the debt go to? Well, the king just paid it. The king just paid it. He just said, I'm gonna erase the debt, scratch it from the books, onto my account. We'll put it in the deficit line, we'll fix the books, it's going to happen. So this man, this servant goes out, and he's pretty happy. He walks out of the palace, he's cheering high, he's saying, woohoo, that was awesome. But he's already made a few plans on how he was going to collect that other money. And so he starts looking around, and he runs into somebody who owes him 100, and it's not denarii, it's something else. Okay? worth maybe $100. Maybe $200 in today's economy. Owes him a little bit of money, in other words. It's not a big deal. So he goes out and says, hey, you owe me money. And the man says, yeah, but it's only like due today, isn't it? Yeah, pay up. Well, I don't quite have it. You know, can you give me a little time? I just need to go round up a few things and take care of it. I'll have it maybe by the end of the day, maybe by tomorrow. He says, no, you owe me money. I want it now. And he starts using some of the rough language the king used on him. He says, no. I want it now, and you got to pay up. And he says, I don't have it. He says, all right, guards. Convenient thing, we're here still by the palace. Pick this man up, throw him in the jail until he pays back. He stays in there. And into jail, this man goes for a couple $100. And the servants, who had also been in the accounting room with the king, are watching the proceedings saying, what just happened? We saw this guy get 10,000, more than $1,000, but 10,000 denarii forgiven. And he's coming out and charging this man for just a couple $100. What went on? And they go back and report to the king and says, we're confused, king. We saw this thing on the street.